you know, I'm not an expert at all in the tribunal, so I've been reading and trying to catch up. And one of the criticisms mm-hmm. of the tribunal from the outside, and maybe from people familiar with it, is that the crimes involving sexual violence mm-hmm. have not been as focused, as well prepared, mm-hmm. that the identification and perhaps the evidence on the mm-hmm. sexual violence has not been done as well as could be. Mm-hmm. So now you've been on the investigative side early yes. on, and mm-hmm. now, of course, preparing mm-hmm. Cases and advising in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. Can you yeah. comment upon that? Help me understand the criticism better.
Yes, in fact, I have even somehow, I think I am among those who have extensively written about that. I have published articles about, you know, the tribunal's record in respect of, you know, prosecution of gender-based violence. And yeah, I have also read about, you know, some of those criticism, and I have also lived it in the sense that I was advising the judges in Changugu, the Changugu trial, for example, when this NGO of women NGO based in Canada, they filed an amicus curiae because they wanted the judges to order the prosecution to amend the indictment and include some sexual assault and rape charges, and which it was turned down by the judges, but for very good reasons. Because I think that what people forget was that, okay, right from the beginning, in the early case, I think that the record of this tribunal is not as poor as the people would describe it. Because right from the beginning, in the Akayesu case, which was the real first case we had, the judges, amid the trial, when evidence of rape unfolded, the judges authorized the amendment of the indictment to include charge of rape. And in fact, you know, one of the records of this tribunal was that this tribunal has been the first of the kind to decide that genocide, you know, rape can be a tool of genocide.
Yes.
So, but what sometimes people forget also is that, you know, it's not always easy to be successful for the prosecution in bringing those kind of charges. And unfortunately, most of the outsider who make that criticism, they are not in a position to test the quality of the evidence and make a good determination as to the potential of success. Because people, for example, you should remember that in the Musema trial, charge of rape was brought and even a conviction was obtained, but that conviction was eventually overturned by the appeal chamber. So what does it tell us? This tell us that, okay, so it may be easy sometimes to bring charge of rape, but that does not necessarily guarantee success. And when, of course, now you are not successful, this also will kind of backfire, in a sense that will even increase the trauma of those victims awaiting, you know, to be awaiting justice. And I think that one of the difficulty also people need to remember, and in saying so, I am not downplaying the gravity of rape. People need to understand that here we are dealing with very, very serious crime. So you are talking about rape just as an intermediate crime to capture genocide. But when you look at carefully, so technically speaking, you will see that in fact rape can hardly be a tool of genocide, in a sense that what is genocide? Genocide is a crime by which you tend to eliminate a group, to eradicate a group. So rape is not a tool of eradication. So of course there are, you know, that can affect the victim, but usually what happened in Rwanda was that some victims have been raped, but eventually they were killed, meaning that, you know, the rape has been kind of absorbed by a more radical crime, meaning the killing. So that also may explain why, for example, why rape is not that always present because we are dealing with very serious crime which do not necessarily make it necessary to go through rape to achieve what we want to achieve.
You've thought about this a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.